Hello again. In this lesson, our objective is to demonstrate the various ASP.NET server controls that can be added to our web applications. And we're also going to talk about positioning controls using absolute positioning and tools that help us align and size and space out the controls. But as we begin, I want to give a brief overview of the Visual Web Developer 2005 Express Edition interface. Now, as I stated in the previous video, this series of lessons is intended for those who already know some Visual Basic as well as HTML syntax. If you know Visual Basic, I'm assuming that you're somewhat familiar with the various windows that are available within the Visual Studio IDE. All of the Express Edition tools use the same interactive development environment interface with similar windows and toolbars and menus and so on. However, I realize that some who might be watching this might need a quick refresher course. So I want to spend just a moment overviewing a few of the basics with you. So let's start by creating a little sample application as a springboard for our discussions. We're going to go to File, New Website, like we did in the previous video. Make sure ASP.NET Website is selected. We're going to go to the very end and remove the default name. We're going to type in Lesson 02 and make sure the language is Visual Basic and then click OK. And so now we have our default.aspx in our Lesson 02 project. So as you saw from the previous lesson, where we did the majority of our work was in this main area in the center of the screen. And the main area is home to a number of different tabs. So every time we open up a different file, we get a new tab that we can change so that we can have multiple tabs open and switch easily between one file and the other. Also, individual files, depending on the type of file that they are, have different ways of viewing that file. In the case of the default.aspx, notice at the very bottom of the tab we had the design view versus the source view that allowed us two different ways to look at the exact same file. The actual source code versus a visual designer that allowed us to kind of see what you see is what you get while we're building our visual interface. Now the tabs can be arranged for your convenience by just holding down on the name of a tab and dragging it to the left or the right. You can see here I put default.aspx at the end of the list of tabs. Or I could drag it and put it at the beginning of the list of tabs. Also, in some cases, I may want to see two tabs at the exact same time, in which case I can right-click on a tab and select New Horizontal Tab Group, which creates two groups of tabs in the main area. This upper set of tabs here and then the lower set of tabs. You can see I only have one here at the bottom. I can get that tab back by selecting Move to the Previous Tab Group. In addition to working with the tabs in the main area, there's also a series of windows that are docked either to the left or the right-hand sides, as we saw in the previous lesson. And before we talk about the functionality of these specific windows, let's talk about windows in general within the Visual Studio IDE. First of all, as you'll notice, I currently have one of the windows in auto-hide mode. So when I hover my mouse cursor over the Toolbox tab on the left-hand side, notice that it jettisons out. And when I remove my mouse cursor, it then disappears again off to the left-hand side. However, by selecting the little pin and pushing it down, so now that it's in the down position, notice that the auto-hide feature is turned off. Also notice that I can resize the window by using the little crosshairs icon that appears whenever I hover my mouse cursor over just the right position for the side of the window. Also, whenever the auto hide is turned off, I can rip the given window from its current position, and I can just leave it floating in my development environment if I choose, or I can dock it to a different side of the designer interface. Notice that I get these little helper windows that appear, these little helper icons, so that it helps me decide exactly where this will be positioned if I were to drop it at this time. You can see at this point, hovering here, it will become a tab group with the properties window, or I can drag it up here and it'll become part of the tab group of the Solution Explorer. Or I can make it its own tab group to the right of the Solution Explorer, to the left of the Solution Explorer, or underneath or between the Solution Explorer and the Properties window. So I'm going to just drop it here. You can see now it shares a tabbed area with the Properties window. Or I can then again drag the taskbar off and drop it back into place here on the left-hand side. Select Auto Hide, and once again it disappears. Now in that case I accidentally dragged the Properties window off, so let's put this back into place here by creating a new tab group. And so let's see if I can rip these two apart. There we go. Now I got it. Great. So we have the Properties window back in its position and the toolbox back here. Turn on Auto Hide and we're back to where we were when we started. So whenever we have only three or four windows open, this is not a huge issue. But as you'll discover, if we begin to build our applications, there will be more and more windows involved, and we'll need to find good places for them that are comfortable for us as we develop our web applications. Okay, now let's take a moment to talk about the windows themselves. I'm going to turn off the auto hide and open up the default.aspx page in the main area. Notice when I do that, the toolbox becomes populated with the controls, and we've already used two of the controls in the previous video, the label and the text and the button control. Notice that the toolbox is split up into a number of different sections that are only visible whenever we use the little scroll bar on the right hand side. I can use the minus button next to the word standard in order to roll up that category of toolbox items so I can see all the categories. There's data controls, validation controls, which we'll use in this lesson, navigation controls, login controls, which we'll use in several lessons, I believe lesson 9 or 10, web parts, HTML controls, which are traditional HTML controls, not the ASP.NET server control variants, and then a general tab where we can drag and place our favorite controls for quick access. I'm going to expand the standard control area again so I can see all my controls once more. The other window that we used quite a bit was the Solution Explorer. And the Solution Explorer allows us to view all the files that are associated with a given solution, or in the case of a solutionless project, as we have here, just a website, a loose collection of individual files, you can see all the files that are associated with a given website. We can also see relationships between files by using the little plus and minus buttons that appear in order to view all the files that are associated, in this case, with the default.aspx file. This is a perfect spot for the code behind file for the default.aspx file, the .vb file, which contains the code behind for that page, as we noted in the previous lesson. And then finally, the Properties window, which allows us to see all of the properties that we can change for the currently selected item. And we can change the currently selected item by either selecting it from the drop-down box in the Properties window, or by selecting the item in the Visual Designer and then making the appropriate changes. In this case, I can change the text of our button that we've added to OK by simply placing my mouse cursor into the settings side next to the label side. Notice that also whenever I select a property, that you can see a description of the use of that property underneath the property window. And to view any events that are supported by that button, I can just click this little toggle, the events toggle button, which will allow me to see and then also create an event handler for a given event that's supported by that button. Let's go back to the Properties window, because we won't talk about events and writing code to handle properties and events until the next lesson in this series. Okay, the next thing that we want to talk about are the various toolbars that are available. Notice that whenever we're working within a web application, we get a special toolbar that allows us to modify and format the visual aspects of our web page that we're currently working on. This is called the formatting toolbar. Notice that I got to this list of toolbars by right-clicking in the toolbar area, anywhere in the toolbar area, and selecting or checking a toolbar that's available. So, for example, I might want to use the layout toolbar, which I'll demonstrate its use in just a few moments here. Notice when I do that, that the toolbar extends off to the right-hand side. It starts here with these little buttons that are arranged vertically, and this is a handle for that toolbar. So I'm going to place my mouse cursor over it. Notice that it turns into a cross, and I'm going to hold my left mouse button down and drag down, and notice that it created a new line for this toolbar, and I can position it in place. I can rotate it to the right or to the left. I'm going to position it over here, and this will come in handy in just a few moments, but that's how we add and remove tools or toolbars from our toolbar area, by either checking or unchecking the various items, the various toolbars that are available. Okay, so for now that's probably enough of a discussion of the various windows and toolbars and how to manipulate them within the Visual Studio environment. Let's now talk about how to position the actual controls that we drag and drop from our toolbox onto the designer surface. And one of the first things that you'll notice is whenever we start to drag and drop items onto our designer, like for example, I've dragged a label and I'm going to try and place it over here in the lower right hand corner, that it automatically pops open to sit right next to the button control. Now if I try this again with a text box, it still goes right next to the label. So how can we get some more flexibility with the layout of the text and the controls that we add to our web pages? Let's take a look at the source view of this web page to get a clue of what we need to do. As you can see, we have our controls, the button, the label, and the text box controls, but there's no paragraph tag or no break tag in between these controls, so that's why they line up automatically next to each other. So in order to change their position, I would have to use a number of spaces with using the keyboard, which is not a very effective way to go about it. And to change their vertical positioning, I may have to use the Enter key on the keyboard a number of times in order to introduce some break tags or paragraph tags onto my web pages. But again, that's not the perfect solution. Now, what many of us have done in the past is to insert tables and use them in order to lay out our web pages. So I'm going to go to Layout, Insert Table from the menu. And then this allows me to select the number of rows and columns that I want to include within a new table that I'm going to introduce to my web page. I can also set things like the alignment, the border, cell padding, and cell spacing from here as well. I can even adjust individual cell properties if I wish to at this time, or I can select them individually and set them in the properties window. I'm just going to click the OK button for now, and notice that it produces for me a 3x3 table into my web page. So I can drag and drop. For example, I'll put my text box there, I'll put my label in this cell, and then I'll take my OK button and I'll drag and drop it down to this cell. And then I'm going to run my application to see that I've got some more advanced layout control over my web page than I had previously. And this is certainly one option, and an option that most people take whenever they're designing their web pages, to use tables in order to do that. But there's also another option. Let me delete everything from here by just selecting it with my mouse cursor, then hitting the delete key on my keyboard, getting all the way up to the top. And I'm going to go to the layout menu again. I'm going to go down to position, and then go all the way down to the auto position options. I'm going to select this change positioning to the following for controls added when using the toolbox, paste, or drag and drop. And so at this point, I'm going to have absolutely positioned controls whenever I drag and drop them from the toolbox. I'm going to click the OK button now. So let's go ahead and try this again. I'm going to drag and drop the button from the toolbox. And now notice that I can position it anywhere on the web page. Now, how is this accomplished? Let's take a look at the source view and notice that a style tag is now inserted into the definition for my button control, which gives me a Z index, which means, you know, how are the controls overlapping? The left position and, the top position here kind of extends onto two lines, and it's positioned absolutely. Let's go back to our design view. and we can position a label as well. Now when we drop it, it might place it over in the left-hand side, but we can drag it around and move it to its position. Let's go ahead and delete these two controls off and play around with our options just a little bit more. I'm going to switch back, layout, position, auto position options. I'm going to remove the checkbox from here and click OK, which puts us back into a relative position. We also have the option to insert what are called layers. And layers are absolutely positioned areas that we can introduce into a relatively positioned web page. So notice that I have relative position here, and I have absolutely positioned areas here. And within these areas, I can drag and drop controls. So this is kind of an in-between solution where I can now reposition groups of relatively positioned controls within a relatively positioned web page. And yet there are still other options as well. I can, I believe, set each individual control and change it to be absolutely positioned. By actually selecting it and then going to the layout menu one more time, going down to the position submenu and then selecting absolute for this single control. So there are my options for moving things around. Everything else is currently relatively positioned. This one control now has been changed to be absolutely positioned. So why all the emphasis between relative and absolute positioning? Because I find this to be one thing that confuses developers when they think they're wanting to work with an absolutely positioned environment but only getting relatively positioned results. So hopefully this will answer one of the big question marks in your mind. And it really comes down to the source code that's added to each of the controls. When we relatively position that last button, as you see here, is selected at the bottom, all it did was just add the style property and set some of its subproperties. The left, the position equals absolute, and top equals 113 pixels, and so on. The other two controls, the button, the text box, don't have those properties set. Okay, so enough about that. Let's go ahead and delete all these controls off, and let's move on from here. Okay, one more feature I wanted to show you before we move on is let's insert a table. We'll just set our 3x3 table. Okay, now say that I want to select a given cell in order to modify the features of that cell. What I can do is also use these little selection areas down at the bottom to select an individual cell or to select the content of the cell. Okay, so this gives me the ability to select an entire row at a time, the entire table, an individual cell, or just the content that's inside of a cell in order to modify its properties. Okay, so let's go ahead and delete this as well. Just want to make you aware of that navigational ability that you have through this tag selector here at the bottom. Okay, now on to the fun stuff. I promised you that we were going to take a tour of some of the controls that are in the toolbox, so let's do that right now. First of all, for this example, what I want to do is go to the layout menu one more time, go to position, go to auto position options, and then change the auto position to absolutely positioned, and click OK. So now everything we add to our form will be absolutely positioned. Okay, so for this example, what I want to do is just create a really simple little data entry interface that we might use on like our company's intranet, for example, where we allow a project manager to take a look at the various sub-projects that are going on and what the status of those projects are and what department that they're billable to and so forth, and allow our staff to enter their current statuses for various projects. Now we're going to make this very simple, so we won't make it too complicated. It'll give us a springboard in order to demonstrate some of the various controls that we'll come in contact with virtually every day while using Visual Web Developer 2005 Express Edition. So one of the first controls that we were able to use in our previous lesson were the label controls. And these are simply just textual labels with a programmatic interface like we used in the previous video. You'll recall to change the content of that label by setting its property equal to hello world or whatever the case might be. So in this case, let's change this to name, because we're going to use the labels this time as labels in the classic sense as we're building like Windows applications, right? We wanted to give the user some indication of what those controls that these labels are associated with will actually do. And the first control that we'll use is a text box control. And text boxes are simply to allow users to input any free form kind of information, things that can't be predicted. So we allow alphanumeric characters to be entered here. I'm going to also change the name of, or the ID of our controls as we go along using a fairly new naming standard. We're going to, for example, in lowercase name, uppercase text box. Okay. And I think we've all seen text boxes before. It just allows for free form input. Now, if we have a situation where we're trying to collect data, where there's only a limited number of options, we might use something like a drop-down list box. So let's go ahead and position one of those on our form here. And we're going to name this status drop-down. And this is where we may want to only allow the user to select from a pre-selected or pre-entered number of options. So what we can do here is either we're going to click this little arrow in the upper right-hand corner. You may have not seen this up to this point if you're just new to the Express Edition tools. But this gives us a list of quick tasks that are associated with that given control. And we can either data bind this particular control, which we're going to talk about in lessons, I believe, 7 and 8. Or for right now, we're going to hard code the options in by clicking the little Edit Items link in our Quick Tasks menu. And I'm going to select the Add button to enter our first list item. So the status will either be in progress or not started or complete. Or we might even choose select one as the first option, right? And we're going to set the selected option to true. So we want this, by default, whenever the page loads up, to be the first option that's visible. And we might even just move it up to the top of the list. And then, in order to create the proper progression here, we may want to move this not started, this number 2, up ahead of the in progress. So I'll use these little arrow buttons to move each list item up and down the list. So now we have select one, not started, in progress, and complete. The select one list item has a selected option of true, so by default it'll be selected. I'm going to click the OK button. And then I'm going to click the little back arrow to close the quick tasks. Okay, so next we're going to use a series of radio buttons. And radio buttons are popular whenever you have like a true, false, or yes or no type question, or a limited number of options that are available to the user that are both visible at the same time. Now, it differs from the drop-down list box in so much that the drop-down list box only allows us to it allows us to select from maybe 100, 200 different options, where the radio buttons, because of the amount of space that they take up, only allow us maybe to put 5, 6 within a group for selection. So understanding the propensities of each of the controls and then choosing the right controls for the situation can make all the difference when designing your forms. So in this case, we're going to change this to marketing radio button as the ID. And I'm going to change the text that appears next to the actual radio button by setting its text property. And we'll change this one to accounting. We'll call this the accounting radio button. Okay. So now let's go ahead and test our application just to see how it works thus far. So I can select either marketing or accounting, right? Uh-oh, I have two selections here. What did I do wrong? Well, we can and we need to actually group these two together to let ASP.NET and the web browsers know that these are grouped together. So treat them as one or the other, but not both. And to do that, we will place them into a group. We'll call this group name department. So we have to make sure that both controls have their group name property set to department. Now let's try it this time that we've set that option. Let's see if it makes anything better. Okay, so now we can see a one or the other selection, but not both. Great. Now let's add a checkbox, and checkboxes are popular for whenever we need a yes-no type of question response from the user. So we're going to call this our approval checkbox. We're going to leave its check property to false, so by default it will not be checked. But we're going to change the text property to requires approval. And so let's test this now. So we can type anything in here, we can select something there, we can choose one of these, and then either click on or off requires approval. Great. Let's move on. We'll only use a couple more controls in this example, and then we'll probably use a lot more as we continue through this series of lessons. The next control I want to demonstrate is the use of the hyperlink, and we'll put this right next to this requires approval. And the hyperlink control is great whenever we want to dynamically change the link or the URL that a given hyperlink points to. So we can dynamically, programmatically change the hyperlink if we wish to by setting its properties within the code that we write for our application. So in this case, I'm going to type something like more information, maybe to provide a help area. And then I can set the navigate URL equal to some project folder if I wish to that's currently on my local hard drive, or I can type in a URL like Learn Visual Studio, .net. I can also change the target from the current window to a new blank window. So we have options there as well. And now I'm going to skip over the rest of the controls within the standard area and talk about some of the I am going to add a button control, and I'm just going to place this here. I'm going to call this the OK button. OK button. Great. And I'm going to add a label that I'm going to use a little bit later in this example. And I'm going to call this success label. And I'm going to remove the text property from here. Great. I'm also going to add one more label that we'll use a little bit later in this example called status label. So I'm going to remove the text property and call this status label. Okay. Now let's move on and talk about validation controls. No doubt you visited a website, maybe a website where you tried to pay for something online, and there were certain fields which were required fields. And so if you forgot to fill in a required field, the web browser would stop you before submitting that web page back to the web server and would say you forgot information in one of the following fields. You forgot to fill in the name, you didn't pick a status, you didn't choose a department, and so on. Okay, so ASP.NET 2.0 makes it very easy to add these types of field requirements as well as other types, not just required fields, but also check one field based on the values that are within another field or some preset values through the use of a series of validation controls. So you can see here that there's a whole validation section. What we're going to do is choose this required field validator, and I'm going to place one right next to our text box. And we're going to call this name required field. There we go. And I'm going to need to set some properties of this control. The first thing that I want to do is select the control to validate. This is going to give me a list of controls that this particular validation control can work with. And we're going to select the name text box. Next, I want to change the error message. I'm going to change this to just a star. So if there is an error, it'll put a little star next to it. Actually, let's do something like this. Required field. And we'll change this a little bit later to use the star. Okay? So now let's run our application. And I'm going to click the OK button. But notice, because I didn't enter anything into this, that the required field message came up. Now I typed in some additional information, click OK again, and notice that it goes away. Nothing really happens because we haven't written any code behind our form. However, you can see the utility of the required field validation control, which requires that in this particular case, something is filled out in the name text box before the form will be allowed to submit back to the web server. Very cool. And very easy to do. Let's take this one step further. I'm actually going to move this status label down a little bit. And the next control that I want to use is a compare validator. Very similar to the required field, but instead of checking to make sure that the text property is not empty, in this case, we'll make sure that it's not equal to some value. I want to make sure that the user makes a selection in the status dropdown so that select one and then an ellipsis is not submitted back to the web server. If we'll stop the submission of that form before it makes it back to the web server if they have refused to select a status from this dropdown list box. So let's go ahead and set some properties of this control. First of all, we want to set the control to validate as the status dropdown. Here we have some options we're going to have to think through a little bit. First of all, we want the type to be set to string, and we want the value to compare select one dot dot dot, and we need to change the operator so that it's not equal to select one. So now that we've set these properties, let's go ahead and run our application again. I'll type in some data there, and then I'm just going to leave select one, and notice that whenever I click the OK button, compare validator, I forgot to change the error message property, but you can see that it actually kicked into gear, and by selecting not started, it goes away. Okay. Here's another neat feature as well. Notice that both are now lit up. Both validator controls are lit up because both conditions are found to be in violation of the validation rules that I've set up. And so you don't have to nickel and dime your end user by saying you forgot the name. Let them fill out the name, click OK, and then say, oh, well, now you forgot the status, and so forth. You can show them everything that's wrong all at one time. Okay, very cool. Let me go ahead and change some of the properties here. We will change the error message on both of these, and we will change the text to be name is required. And we'll change the text here to be status is Whoops, I think I got this backwards actually. Let's do this. Status is required. Okay, there we go. Name is required. And now we're going to use a third validation control. Great. And that validation control is called the validation summary. And so it will list everything in one big list at the bottom of our web page or at the top, wherever we prefer to put it, so that the user need to only look in one place to get a full explanation of everything that's wrong before trying to resubmit the web page. Now, I have not set any properties for this validation summary control, but by virtue of the fact that it exists on our web form, it's now ready to be used. So I'm going to run my application. I'm not going to fill in name or status, but I am going to click the OK button. And notice that it does put the red asterisks next to name and status, but at the very bottom, it gives us the full explanation of the problem. Name is required, status is required, and I can make this as friendly of as an error message as I want to. I can even add maybe an opening line that says, please fix the following problems before submitting the form. Very neat. Okay, so let's move on from there. Okay, so we're nearing the end, but I wanted to show you some neat functionality that's contained within the layout toolbar. So we already talked about the purpose for the layout toolbar in the previous video, I believe, or the beginning of this video, and that is to help us determine where we want to or how we line up the items on our form. So you can see that the left-hand side of the name, status, and department labels are slightly out of alignment. Looks like status might be pushed out just a little bit more than name and department. So what I can do is select all the controls and notice that the name control has white carrots around its selection. The others have black or grayed out carrots around their selection, which means that whenever we use the layout toolbar, that it's going to use the current settings of the name, because it's the white carrots, it's the last selected one, as the settings for, in this case, the left-hand side. So now we're going to click this align lefts, and if you saw, it was just a really small adjustment that status and department made. They were moved over to the right just a little bit. Okay. Now the same can be true whenever I select name and the text box. I may want to align their tops or align their middles. That's probably a better way to go about it. So it calculates what the middle XY position is of name, and then it sets that Y position for our text box as well. Now we can use other controls to decrease the horizontal spacing or increase horizontal spacing, or to remove any horizontal spacing as I did accidentally, okay? Or I have the freedom to select it and use the arrow key on my keyboard to move things around to the right or to the left, up or down. Okay. Now in this particular case, maybe what I want to do is move these a little bit closer together, and I'll stagger these off. First thing I want to do is make the vertical spacing equal, so whatever the spacing is between name and status will be the same spacing between status and department. So here we'll select this button, make it equal, so it moves status up just a little bit. Then we'll want to select all three controls, and we're going to align their lefts. And then I'm going to select the controls here and align their middles. Do the same here. Whoops. And align their middles. Okay. And we'll do the same here and align their middles. Whoops. Kind of made a mistake there. So what can I do? I can go back by selecting Edit, Undo Align Middle. Okay. The reason is because I had the wrong item selected, so I want to make sure department is selected, and I'm going to click align middles again, moving everything up. Great. OK. Okay, and I might just move this manually and then use this to align the lefts. And maybe we'll do the same thing here. We'll align the lefts. Okay, so we can get some precision control over the layout of our forms by using the toolbar. So I would encourage you to play around with the toolbar, the layout toolbar, and try your hand at it and see if you can't make it do exactly what you want to do to get some precision control, some fidelity over how your controls are placed on your web form when in absolutely positioned. Finally, I want to talk about postback a little bit. Now, we haven't talked about postback too much up to this point, but you've noted that whenever you run the application and whenever we are not in violation of one of the validation rules that we've set up and we click the OK button, what happens is that a request is made back to the web server passing in the data that we have filled out in our form. Okay. Now, the name of the file does not change. This is called a postback, and we'll talk about this more extensively in lessons 3 and 4. But if you've ever worked with developing web applications, dynamic web applications in the past, you may have posted this data to a page that then saved it into the database before moving it onto a confirmation page or whatever the case might be. Okay, but in this particular case, whenever we post, we're posting back to the original web page. So I click the OK button. Get a little message there. And notice the little green bar at the bottom, which shows a reload. Okay. Now, nothing really happened on the page. It flickered a little bit. Notice that the URL is exactly the same. But what happens underneath the hood is that this request, the OK button, in a post is sending back the data in the name field and the status field, and if we had populated any properties for the department and requires approval, all that data would get posted back to our default.aspx page. So if we had a handler, an event handler for the OK button underscore click event, that code would fire. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's go ahead and write some code. I'm going to double click on the OK button. I'm going to put what do we call that? Status label dot text equals success. I think that's what we called this one. Success label. Let me change that real quick here. Let's run our application. And so let's fill in some data here. And when I click the OK button, it's going to post our KLJH from the name field and our not started from the status, marketing and requires approval options selected. And when I do that, it's going to post all that data back to our default.aspx.vb code that we wrote. And notice that it changed then our label from empty to the word success. Now, there might be some occasions where we want to do a lookup based on the selection in a drop-down list box. Okay, so by virtue of selecting in progress, we may want to look something up in a database or change the visible options, whether some controls are visible or not on the rest of the web page. How can we do that? There's no button that we can select. Well, we have this option for some controls called auto postback, where we want some control over the selection of a control and then its ultimate posting of that data back to the code that we wrote behind. So let's double click on this this drop down list box and notice that it creates an event handler called status drop down selected index changed. So here what we'll do on the status label, is we'll take the status dropdown dot selected item or selected value rather, and so we will list that. We'll say you selected Okay, so let's go ahead and run the application now. But nothing happens. What did we forget? Well, merely by setting that property doesn't mean that the form is going to be posted back. Remember, this code that we're writing only happens once a postback has occurred. The postback is triggered by your web browser. To get the web browser to send that information back over the internet to the web server, we're going to have to set a special property of our control called auto postback. Currently, by default, set to false, but we're going to set it to true. Okay. And now we're going to run our application and select complete. And notice now there was a postback. You saw that flickering of the screen. So it posted our selection back, and it says you selected complete. Very cool. Let's take a look at the source code and what happens behind the scenes to make this happen. I'll expand it out. And notice that the way this is accomplished is through a series of JavaScript. So you see here's our status dropdown. So it's a select tag, name equals status dropdown. On change, run this JavaScript. Set timeout, do postback, and then it calls some special stuff. And that's how it works behind the scenes. Okay, so we covered a lot of territory in this video. Hope you enjoyed it. We looked at, first of all, some of the windows and how to manipulate those windows within the Visual Studio IDE environment that Visual Web Developer and the rest of the Express Edition tools use. We took a look at the various controls and how to position those controls relatively and absolutely, how to use the toolbar to position those controls, and we talked about postback and auto postback. So, in the next video, we're going to expand on how to write code to handle events like we've done in this example, and how to set properties using the code editor. We'll talk about the special page load event and how to manipulate the page load event to make sure that it doesn't accidentally fire whenever we don't want it to. And we'll talk about some global events that are set in a special file called the global.asax, and a lot more. So I hope you enjoyed this video and enjoy the rest of the videos. If you enjoyed it, please visit www.learnvisualstudio.net to download and watch over 400 videos just like this one, aimed at all skill levels on many different topics related to C#, Visual Basic, ASP.NET, and more. Thank you.